This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Melinda Pencava. Neil Conan is on assignment in London. Slavery in the United States ended about 135 years ago, but today we are still learning about this dishonorable piece of America's past. It's a tough topic. As with any period in history, there are different interpretations of what happened to the people involved. And slavery brings up other questions, too. Is this black history or American history? Whose story are you telling? That of the slaves, the abolitionists, the slaves who ran away to freedom, or the slaves who were trapped behind? Last night, HBO premiered a documentary on slave narratives called Unchained Memories. Celebrities such as Samuel L. Jackson and Oprah Winfrey read the works of former slaves, words that had been, those were words of the former slaves, those were words that were recorded by the Works Progress Administration's Federal Writers Project back in the 1930s. If you saw the documentary last night or other presentations about slave life, then you may have considered our question today. How do you teach and learn about slavery? To join the conversation, the number is 1-800-989-8255. That's 1-800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. A book that accompanies the documentary has an introduction that was written by Spencer Crew. He's executive director of the National Underground Railroad Freedom Center and joins us on the phone right now from his office in Cincinnati, Ohio. Welcome, Spencer Crew.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Hey there. Well, how do the narratives in Unchained Memories give us what many may not have already known? What do they give us that's new?
Well, I think what's wonderful about them is they give us the view of the institution through the eyes of those who are in the middle of it. It gives us a sense of the breadth of experiences, the breadth of challenges, and just a real feeling on a personal level for what living as a slave meant to these individuals.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Now, these were the actual stories of slaves that were told.
Yes, they were. These were sort of the last living generation of slaves in this country around the 1930s. Most of them were in their 70s or their 80s and had been fairly young during the period of slavery, but they still had direct memories connecting us back to that period. So it was really wonderful and valuable to capture their thoughts before we lost them.
Okay, well, let's listen to some of those, a piece of that original slave narrative recordings. This was done in the 1930s.
Oh, okay.
Well, they taken that old woman, poor old woman, cat in the peach orchard and whipped her. And, you know, just tied her hand this way, you know, around the peach orchard tree and whipped her. And, well, she couldn't do nothing but just kick her feet, you know, just kick her feet. But it just had her clothes off down to her waist, you know. Just didn't have a plumb naked, but they had a clothes down to her waist. And every now and then they'd whoop her, you know, and then snuff the pipe out on her, you know, snuff pipe out on her.
That's one of the recordings of a former slave recounting her recollections. This was recorded in the 1930s. Is this a good way to teach this topic, to go over these narratives? Spencer Crew?
Well, I think it is, in the sense that one of the things that brings history to life and one of the things that gives history real meaning and affect for many of us is to connect it to real people and connect it to the stories of those real people. And I think that next level is actually having a chance to read their words or hear their voices and really to become connected with them emotionally. And I think that takes away from the realm of the abstract of a distant time and place that has no impact on us to real people like our own parents, like our own relatives, that we can begin to relate to and understand their challenges.
Mm-hmm. And they may also be telling things that had not really been part of the other narrative to that point, because if I'm understanding correctly, there have been several narratives of slaves over time. Frederick Douglass, even before the Civil War, freed the slaves in the 1840s. He had published accounts of freed slaves, right?
Yes.
But it wasn't until the 30s that we started hearing these accounts of these former slaves on tape. Was that a big shift? What was going on there?
Well, I think it was a shift in a couple of ways. I think one of the challenges of the earlier writings is that many of them were what we would call abolitionist tracts. Hmm. And they were set up as a way of highlighting the inhumanity of slavery to touch people's sensibilities, to get them of the belief that we had to get rid of the institution of slavery, which is, you know, a legitimate thing to do as you're trying to bring about its demise. I think what you have here is a pretty straightforward, unvarnished recollection of individuals, of their experiences. And What makes it very important is that if you look at the historiography that was out there prior to that time for those who were describing the institution of slavery, very often it described it much differently. It described it as a benign institution where the individuals were well-treated and really didn't mind being in that state of control.
Who was doing that writing?
There were a number of historians who were doing that. Aldred Phillips is probably the name that comes to the forefront more often than any other. Many of them were Southerners who were in many ways trying to offer an apology.
These are white Southerners we're speaking of.
Absolutely. You had some writers like W.E.B. Du Bois, an African-American who'd been writing in a different way, but his works weren't getting the same sort of acknowledgement as these other writers.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And, of course, we also had persons such as Booker T. Washington, who his message was, let's not dwell on the past.
Oh, absolutely.
At the turn of the century.
Yes. In fact, his argument was that you needed to focus on the future, you needed to focus on improvement, and that those were difficult, hard times that we needed to move past.
Mm-hmm. Which brings us to the present. I mean, how ought slavery be taught, do you think? Let's talk in general to the general public. I mean, is there different approaches to taking to just how to get this message across? And what is that message, I suppose, is the other question.
Well, I think that part of it is to teach it in its own context, to understand the period in time in the history of the country. I think to understand the grip that institution has on this nation. One of our colleagues was talking about it here recently and talking about just how powerful an economic engine slavery was during that period and how hard it was to resist because it had so much impact. So I think we have to have...
From the very basic idea, you did not have to pay your workers.
Yes.
Right.
But also that a lot of the economy of the rest of the country revolved around supporting the institution, supplying goods and food and also getting the product of that and then selling it either in New England or in London as part of the commercial trade. So it's a very encompassing mm-hmm. institution in this country. And so we have to sort of understand that, but then you have to take it from that level, I think, to the personal level, to the individual level, and beginning to understand how those two things intersect, the issues that were connected with that is a wonderful way of getting people to understand this complexity, because I think the challenge here is to have present-day people understand the complexity of that institution and the issues that were part and parcel of it, because it's quite easy sometimes to, from where we sit today, just to out of hand say, well, if I were there, I would act like this. Well, it's not that simple. Mm-hmm. I think we have to understand that. So we understand that trying to find out and understand the legacy of it is not that simple today as easy.
Is that usually said in context of, well, if I were a slave, I'd certainly find a way to escape.
And to escape,
I would not
yes.
live under someone
under those conditions. And I think we all would love to believe that. But I think that as you listen to their stories, and as you listen also to not only the tragedies that were part of their lives, but also the joys that they found within that institution, within their communities, it gives us a fuller picture.
The joys.
Of the issues, yes.
What joys would those be?
Well, some of the things they talked about were the chances to be around family, you mm-hmm. know, the nurturing that they received from their mothers and their fathers, mm-hmm. and the communities in which they lived that try to provide some form of protection for children, that try to provide some form of protection for the members of that community as best they can. And I think that's a really powerful story of survival mm-hmm. and of collective activity for the good of the whole.
Okay, let's go to Leon, who is in Indianapolis. Welcome, Leon.
Hello.
Hello, good afternoon. Did you have a question for our guest?
More of a comment. You started out by asking if this subject of history should be taught and how.
Yeah.
I'm not a teacher. I'm more of a researcher. I've researched my own family's history. I'm African American. And I'm really beginning to enjoy it. And I'm 43. And I was always disappointed in high school. When we got to U.S. history, we stopped with the gold rush of 1849.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, well, what happened after that? Oh, well, you know, this is just where U.S. history stops. And, you know, anything after that, you know, we already know about. And I'm jumping in my chair. You know, let's talk about this. Let's find this out. And I can remember when Roots came on TV and watching that and was really sad when it got to the end, and it ended because I wanted to, you know, see more and find out more about it. So the documentary of the night, I enjoyed it. And I'm not sure how you would teach it in school, but we need to start. start somewhere, and it's not going to be easy. It's going to be rocky, but we'll work those kind of details out as we go through it. But it should not be left out of history. It's too big of an issue.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I think it's part of the fabric of the history of this country. And so we want to know about those things and understand them and figure out what are the lessons we can learn from them. And if you don't talk about them, that doesn't happen.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
I think, Leon, you hit on a point of this is part of American history, but that in your instance at least, you know, that history sort of stopped in the mid-1800s and didn't address this at all.
Right. So many times in school when you go from one grade to another, we talked about the Pilgrims, the Magna Carta, and the divine right of kings and on, but we never got past 1849, and I think that was because no one wanted to deal with the issue of the Civil War, and then once you got to the Civil War, that would take you know, another whole semester to talk about what that was really about and how we got to that point.
Sure. Were you in high school in Indianapolis or elsewhere in the country?
In Indianapolis.
Well, could this be part of it, too, that there is shame involved here on both sides? Maybe the whites might be ashamed of that, and also there could be shame as well among blacks, the descendants of slaves in some form.
As I think back about my growing up, and my grandmother was born in Tennessee in the 1890s, I think that they not were ashamed of it, they just didn't talk about those kind of bad times. It was, you know, I don't want my children and grandchildren to know the kind of pain that, you know, we were dealing with and that my parents and grandparents went through. So we really didn't talk about those type of things. We talked about a lot of other things, but as an adult, as I've learned about my family history, and my grandmother's grandfather actually fought in the Civil War as a young man. And I didn't know that until a few years ago when I actually found the records. And just I'm caught up and just fascinated with it.
Absolutely. So how would you teach slavery to your children?
My oldest child is 9, and they start history in the Indiana in the 4th grade. So once they start talking about history, as he starts asking me questions, we'll get deeper into the subject and take it one step at a time. He didn't watch the special last night. It came on at 10 o'clock, so he was already in bed. But there are other shows that have come on, and usually my kids will watch it for a few minutes if I'm watching, and then get distracted and go to Cartoon Network or Nickelodeon and back to whatever's in their world at their age. But as they get older, I'm sure we're going to talk about it. I can remember talking about Roots with my mother when it came on. My mother was a big history fan and history student, so it was a lot of fun in my house to talk about it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, Leon, thank you so much for your call. Yeah.
Thank you.
1-800-989-8255 is the number, 1-800-989-TALK.
Yeah, I was going to offer that one of the ways that I know that some teachers approach it, my wife is also an educator, is that there are some really fine books out there for children that really begin to broach this topic from the perspective of a child. It's a really wonderful stepping stone to engage in that conversation in an age-appropriate way, and I think that's the way you want to get at it, is to begin to allow the questions to arise in a way that work at a comfortable level for their students at their comprehension level, and to talk it through it in that way.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, Spencer Crew, we have an email here with a question for you. Spencer, you are the head of the National Underground Railroad Freedom Center. And our listener in Covington, Kentucky, was asking that he says he lives nearby and thinks that this center that celebrates the Underground Railroad, he writes, instead of celebrating this, I find that people in Ohio and Kentucky are gripped by the same wave of Southern partisanship and historical revisions that have swept the rest of the country. What is that about?
Well, I think that if I understand the question correctly, I think that people are still clinging to the old histories, the old perceptions of these issues, and are having a difficult time letting them loose and seeing them in new kinds of ways. Mm-hmm. And our hope is that what we will do in the Freedom Center is begin to peel away those old perceptions and put on the table clear information, a clear sense of what the real issues are. I think Unchained Memories is a step in that direction because it's more difficult to argue with the words of the participant mm-hmm. than anything else. And if we can put those kinds of facts in front of people, then really talk about it, accuse people.
Spencer Crew, thank you so much for your time. Spencer Crew, head of the National Underground Railroad Freedom Center. This is NPR. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Melinda Pencava in Washington. And today we're talking about teaching the topic of slavery. The subject can bring up feelings of guilt or embarrassment, and it can be very emotional for people. So now we're looking at how this can be handled in a classroom setting. If you're a teacher who has taught slavery in the classroom or not taught it in the classroom and has a comment on that, we'd like to hear from you. Also, if you remember being taught in school about slavery, we're curious to hear your experiences there, too. Our numbers 1-800-989-8255, 1-800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. And joining us now from member station KUOW in Seattle is history professor Stephanie Camp, who specializes in African-American history and slavery, and she is at the University of Washington. She also talks to other educators about teaching slavery in the classroom. Stephanie Camp, welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Thank you.
Well, what are the problems that you find? What are the challenges in teaching slavery, teaching about slavery, we should say?
There are countless challenges, and they sort of fall into two categories. On the one hand, you have the sort of personal ones that Spencer Crew was talking about and that you were talking about, guilt and feelings of shame. And so one has to sort of figure out how to deal with students on that personal level. And then, of course, there are the sort of content-related issues. What does one emphasize? What larger points does one want to make? And there, I think, I entirely agree with what's already been said. It's important to teach slavery as American history. It's important to teach it as an economic institution that has fundamentally shaped our nation. It was also the institution in which our racial ideologies were forged. That's something that's important to talk about. So those are sort of the two big categories that I tend to sort of go back and forth between thinking about.
Mm-hmm. Now, is the subject taught differently depending on the makeup of the class, the racial makeup of the class?
I think it is, or at least one faces somewhat different issues. In the past, before I moved to the Northwest, where the demographics are obviously very different than Philadelphia, where I taught before.
So you're in a largely white area now.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Largely white majority students. Where one deals with, and certainly when I've talked to public school teachers who are also trying to figure out how to teach slavery, you know, the question of guilt is just one that is inescapable, or shame, a particular kind of shame, not the shame of I would have run away, there's no way I would have stood for it, which is a different issue, but the shame of feeling implicated in the history, and that's something that teachers and I talk about when we think about these matters.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's go to Joseph, who's in Boston, Massachusetts. Hi there, hi there, Joseph.
Hi. Good evening.
Good afternoon. How are you?
Fine. I found this topic is very, very interesting. One of the things that I just wanted to express when I was talking to your screener was the fact that if we can finally talk about slavery honestly. And I was telling him, as I mentioned, that a lot of the times, as your guest had just mentioned about teaching slavery to the classes, it becomes almost a shameful type of experience, mostly for the adults who's trying to teach it, and presently mostly it's the white teacher.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're actually dealing with this, you have to actually look at the fact that these people, black people, were looked at as not as human. They were demonized to the point where they were subhuman, so it made it easy for them to manipulate them and talk them into the bondage that they appeared in. But to actually go back and look at it at that aspect, from that aspect, it becomes very hard because you're dehumanizing them, and you don't want to teach adults, young adults, and give them the impression that we were that demeaning mm-hmm. to another human being.
Right, right. But what is what's your solution to that?
Well, one of the things that I've done with myself, I'm African-American myself, and this being Black History Month, is that I and my wife, we try to embrace all of what our people encompass. That is both the challenges, the progress, the failures, and we don't try to pounded on him, but we tried to stress to him what happened to his ancestors, his great-great-grandfather, and what has changed since then, and how we're trying to always encompass the best that came out of that and try to show, look, this was very bad. This is something that should never have happened, but it did. And now I'm telling you so that you can understand the mechanism that has happened, that has occurred, and now we're going to try to make things better. And when you become of age, you can pass this heritage on and just point out the fact that this was something that your parents were very, found it was very important, very significant for you to learn.
How old was your son when? How old was your child when you began this approach? Began talking about that.
8 years old.
Eight years old.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. 8 years old.
Right.
When we began, and he wanted to know because he would hear it. He would hear it in conversation sometimes. Sometimes when we have folks, people over, but he would never understand it. And then when it was mentioned one time in third grade class, he came to us and asked us, well, what was it all about?
Mm-hmm.
What was slavery?
Mm-hmm.
Did they actually whip us? Did they actually lynch us? What was lynching? And that's why I said, if it's taught honestly, what the mechanism behind how people were demonized to the point where they were dehumanized, and you tell them this was the mechanism behind it, and this is what led to this process, then people will start to get an honest opinion about it. And with my son, I had to explain to him that, yes, this was a horrible thing. This is what these people, white people, did to black people. And he would ask why. And because he was so young, we couldn't break it down to him, but we had to tell him because they were dehumanized. It was just like you would find a dog on the street.
Mm-hmm.
If you didn't like the dog, you would kick the dog.
Right.
And you would abuse it.
Right. Well, thank you for your call, Joseph. Stephanie Camp, do you find that there are children whose parents, children who are African-American, whose parents can enhance whatever they might be getting in class? Are they finding most of this information out in class or at home?
Well, I'm not sure I could really answer that question. Mm-hmm. I don't encounter that many children myself or African-American children. I can say that the students that I meet in my classrooms come with a very strong feeling of having missed this story.
Mm-hmm.
In school, I think that's the main institution that they blame. And they feel that there's a loss. I mean, in part, that's a self-selection process. They're coming because they want to know, so they're coming to my class. But your caller was really making me think, too, that one of the amazing things about teaching slavery, why it's so rewarding in a way, is that there are so many of the huge human stories in it, stories about how diabolical people can be to one another. That's absolutely part of the story, but also how resilient people can be in the face of that, and also how devastated and even destroyed people can be by that, and also how creative societies can become. I mean, all of that is in there when you're talking about the slave trade and whippings and violence and the enduring institution of the family, even in the quarters. So it's a very dramatic story, and I think, that's part of what I was thinking about when your caller was talking.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's go to Betsy in Columbus, Ohio. Welcome, Betsy.
Hi, thank you for taking my call.
Mm-hmm.
I have an idea that I'd like to put forth that I think especially when you start to introduce this topic to children at an elementary age, that you preface it with, peoples have enslaved peoples throughout the world and throughout history. And not to have children sit in a classroom that are from different ethnic backgrounds and couch it in a way that says, your people enslaved those people. And that's an important point that will need to come forth once you get into the discussion. But living in a predominantly white suburban school district, I don't think it helps relations. I don't think it helps understanding. I think it makes sometimes white children feel as though they're doing something nice to be nice to children of color, and not have them feel a personal investment that your ancestors perhaps were in this situation, and we all should identify with this story.
So that it's. Do you agree with the idea of teaching slavery?
That definitely.
Yeah, yeah.
But I've listened and watched it being taught, and especially with very young children in the early elementary school ages, when you teach it as and a situation that happened that a neighbor related to me who has a child of color, he was pointed out in classroom and said, so, for instance, you would have to sit in the back of the bus when they were talking about segregation. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if that is a good way, a good an educational environment for that child, or really a way to get kids to understand and identify with the story when it's his problem or those children, instead of it's a shared history.
Mm-hmm.
It's something that's a history of humanity and all of us.
So, Stephanie Camp, is there a way to teach this that doesn't run away from the facts, the very sordid facts of slavery, but that doesn't hurt children as well, black and white?
Absolutely, yes, absolutely. I mean, I think what the caller's talking about is making history something that's personal, which it's not. It's not personal to any one of us as individuals. History is, all of these stories transcend us all. They're about institutions, they're about societies, they're about laws, they're about cultural practices. And while, of course, as individuals, were any of us, you know, located and living in the past, of course we would be affected and our lives would be determined by those personally. But for people who are interested in studying this, whether you're talking about fifth grade or high school or college, I don't think the point is a personal one at all. It's definitely not about locating blame. I think what people are trying to do when they do that is to make connections between the past and the present, and to show that slavery, that there are legacies of slavery, which is absolutely the case. But I guess one of the things that historians are always really interested in is in studying the past as a kind of strange place, one where, you know, I, as a black person, I was not personally on a slave ship ever. Mm-hmm. However, and so on for all of us living today. Now, that doesn't mean that slavery doesn't shape me or any of us living today, because it shapes our society. But in really complicated ways, not just because we were a slave society 170 years ago, but because of the way that particular racial ideologies were formed, because of the way that the economy was shaped, because of the way that sectionalism was created, and so on, history continued to flow forward and change and create a society in which, whatever housing practices mm-hmm. are separated by race and things like that.
Right. We are talking with Stephanie Camp, who teaches African American history at the University of Washington in Seattle, and you're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And joining us on the phone right now from her office in Fishers, Indiana, is Michelle Evans, who is co-author of the Follow the North Star program at the Connor Living Prairie Museum. Follow the North Star is a role-playing program where for 90 rather intense minutes, visitors to the museum are transformed into runaway slaves who are trying to evade capture as they make their way through the Underground Railroad using the North Star to guide them. And Michelle Evans, thanks for joining us.
You're welcome.
Well, is that what people experience when they participate in Follow the North Star? It's this heading north on the Underground Railroad and trying to escape slavery. Is that right?
Yes. We know that people were illegally brought into Indiana, even though as a native Hoosier, mm-hmm. I learned in fourth grade history and later on that Indiana was always a free state. So it was a shock to me when we were doing the research to find out that there actually was slavery in a free state. But the people that go through the program do encounter the good people and the bad people that fugitives traveling through Indiana would have encountered in 1836.
Mm-hmm. And there were also people who were fleeing points farther south coming
yes.
through Indiana at that point, too. What is the goal of your program there?
Well, our original goal was to just teach good history and show that what was going on in Indiana in the time period to show that one of the big points of the program that we talk about is the effort of the free black communities that a lot of times got left out of the history books that I read as a kid. You know, it wasn't just the Quakers who were helping the fugitive slaves in this effort, but a lot of free black communities that were in Indiana and in other states that were helping these fugitives along the way that didn't always get credit for it.
Mm-hmm. And take us through this teaching through doing here, this being part of role-playing, of imagining yourself as a runaway slave here.
Mm-hmm. Well, we've found one of the comments that we get a lot from people who have been through the program is it's one thing to read in a book about history, but to, even for 90 minutes, knowing that you're going to be perfectly safe, to step into the footsteps of someone in the past, to in some cases have someone yell at you and treat you badly, to be in a place where the Quakers tell you it's all right to lift your head up, you're in a safe place, but people still don't lift their eyes up because they've learned that maybe they don't trust these people for sure. Mm-hmm. To listen to the free black family that they encounter talk about what their life is like in Indiana, the $500 bond that was in effect for any African American that settled in the state at the time. To hear their lives, I think, affects people in a different way than listening to a lecture or reading a history book.
Right. Well, who takes part in this program? Who goes through the role-playing? Is it African Americans, white Americans?
We have had everybody, all ages. Because it is a fairly intense program emotionally, we do recommend it for 12 and up, but we have had high school, college classes, family groups, church groups, corporate groups, just about anybody that you could think of come through the program.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And is it equally divided between black and white coming through?
We looking at our evaluations for this program, it averages about 30% African American, which I would say is probably higher than our daily visitation at our museum.
Mm-hmm. Okay, it has to be a very emotionally exhausting experience.
It is, and we do a debriefing session with every group that goes through. At the end of the program, they can sit down, have a cup of lemonade and a cookie, and talk about it.
Right.
And some people are ready to talk right then and there. They've got lots of questions, or they just want to talk about the experience and how it affected them. Other people just need time to process it a bit. And so everybody goes home with a bibliography, a list of websites, places that they can continue that learning past that 90-minute experience.
And we are talking this hour about the difficulties in teaching slavery. We want to hear from you. Our number is 1-800-989-8255. That's 1-800-989-TALK. If you want more information on Black History Month, including a timeline of key events, you can go to our website at npr.org. I'm Melinda Penkava. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Melinda Penkava, in for Neil Conan in Washington. Today we're talking about teaching the subject of slavery. Our guests are Stephanie Camp, a professor of history at the University of Washington in Seattle, and Michelle Evans with the Connor Prairie Living Museum in Indiana. If you want to join the conversation, our number is 1-800-989-8255, 1-800-989-TALK, the email address TOTN at NPR.org. Stacy joins us now in Groton, Massachusetts. Hi, Stacy.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I really appreciate the topic. I'm a teacher now, but growing up in Kansas and Kansas City in the 70s and 80s, in predominantly white school settings, I found the topic of slavery in the Civil War to be very uncomfortable. I was often the only African-American in the class, and as soon as the word slavery was said, I was almost automatically looked at by everyone mm-hmm. in the class, including the teacher, who would usually be very embarrassed to be raising it in front of me. And I'd come from a family where black history was talked about all the time. I was from a family of educators, and I was reading black encyclopedias early on and reading about famous African Americans. And so I always found it really very just kind of odd, the way in which people responded.
What was uncomfortable, what was uncomfortable about it? Was it the subject that it was raised at all? Was it that everybody looked at you because you were the only African American? Was it something that was said in the way slavery was presented?
Well, it was certainly glossed over, I think, and then perhaps that had to do with the schools I went to. I don't know. I certainly learned much more at home about African-American history and about slavery than I ever learned in school. And so it was at times uncomfortable, but it was also sometimes kind of funny in terms of the embarrassment people seem to have in discussing it in front of me, because I certainly hadn't experienced it. So I just found it kind of fascinating. And when I went to college and studied history and studied African-American history, I found that I learned so much more and African-American literature. And now that I'm a teacher in independent schools in New England, I have been a teacher in independent schools in New England that are predominantly white, I am really... I feel so honored and empowered to be the one teaching, because I've taught a U.S. history survey. I've also taught African American studies, and I get to decide how I bring up the topic of slavery. And I actually start when we talk about the founders. I actually start when I start talking about the ways in which people migrated here, and the decision to really that people made, whether it was an active or an inactive one, to pursue chattel slavery, and how fundamental it was to the economy, how important it was during the fight for independence. And so by the time my students get to the Civil War, they already have debated this issue of slavery on a political level, economic level, socially, and so they really have a lot of information with which to go into a discussion about the Civil War and Reconstruction. So I've really, the tables are kind of turned, I guess, but I have found it really empowering, and my students are interesting in that some of them, particularly African American students, are very grateful, because for the first time they can talk about it on an intellectual level, and I guess people aren't staring at them, maybe they're staring at me, but my white students have sometimes asked me how I can they think I'm sort of emotionally removed from it, and they're sort of fascinated by that, and perhaps I am a little desensitized given my previous experiences, but I'm so happy to be in the driver's seat to some extent, I think. So,
well, thank you for your call, Stacey.
Thank you.
Thanks so much. Stephanie Camp, does that jive with what you have found?
Yeah, Stacey's call is really great. I think the only other thing that I would want to add that slavery sort of, that's important when thinking about how to teach slavery, but also that slavery gives us the opportunity to do is to remember, like, one of the basic reasons why we study history, which is to study how people act. Stacey talked about making decisions, thoughtful moves. History doesn't just happen. People make it happen. And that means both that slavery was created by people, and slavery was fought by people. It was fought by slaves, as slaves. It was fought by slaves during the Civil War. It was fought by abolitionists who were, you know, a radical fringe who, you know, in the 1830s and even during the Civil War were a distinctly minority group who were part of many factors that helped to ultimately transform American society. And so I think that, you know, it's just, we have a lot of opportunity to talk about basically one of the basic points about history, which is that people act. And so it comes back to the issue of blame or shame or feeling guilty. You know, there's so many things to look to in that history. Again, I would personally, I try and encourage my students to disidentify, but I also try to highlight to them that many things happen in history, just like many things happen in our world. And ultimately, what we are responsible for are the decisions that we make and what we do and don't do in our own world.
Right, right. Let's go now to Jennifer, who's in Columbia, South Carolina. Hi there, Jennifer.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Mm-hmm. Welcome to the show.
I wanted to say that I just graduated from high school in 2001. And in high school, for me, slavery was always taught. It wasn't an issue of how it was going to be taught or when it was going to be taught. It was always taught.
Now, where did you go to high school?
I went to high school in Florida, and my high school was mixed. It was 50-50 whites and African Americans. So everybody in our high school got along really well that way. And I felt like nobody ever felt ashamed or felt blamed for teaching that to us. It was always just something that they taught freely, and we always felt open to ask questions, and the teachers were very open and honest about the issue.
Right.
So, you know, I felt, when I was listening to your station, I was kind of surprised maybe just naive thinking that it was something that was taught freely. And, you know, because in our high school it was.
Right. Michelle Evans, you've had a hand at teaching in a certain way. What would you think about what Jennifer's saying here? Is this a generational thing? Has it gotten easier for us to talk about it?
I think it has gotten easier. And one of the things that we often bring up with a lot of the high school kids is how it does relate to modern issues. Some of the attitudes that they see in our program that African Americans experienced in the 1830s, are there different ethnic groups that are experiencing those same attitudes today? And sometimes it's easy to look back and say, well, that was bad a long time ago, but we don't do that now.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a hard thing to look at and see that some of those things are still going on in 2003.
Mm-hmm. Well, Jennifer, thank you so much for your call.
Thank you.
Stephanie Camp, we are talking about teaching about slavery. Are there details that you would not suggest be included? And I'm talking here maybe at more at the elementary school level, the junior high and high school, but as people go along, as students go along, do they need everything all at once, or is there a wisdom in feeding details as we go along? Because it's a horrific tale.
And yes, absolutely. There's no question.
Yeah.
It's a very horrific tale. The teachers that I've talked to and you know, sort of had seminars with, ran the gamut from kindergarten teachers through high school. Obviously, the kindergarten teachers, at least in their own account, there was no question that they were going to not be teaching slavery in the classroom. They were there to engage in a seminar for their own benefit. And teachers who were teaching older students did seem to think about what were the issues that seemed to be most important to them and most possible to teach to students. As I remember it, they were most interested in issues like racial formation, how in the sort of mid-17th century, English people moved from thinking, in the colonies, moved from thinking of themselves as English to white, moved mm-hmm. away from thinking of Africans as savages to black, and, you know, encoded this in law. And those were things that really captivated them. Because I think in some ways it resonates so much with the present. I mean, it's mm-hmm. the foundation of our of some of our racial thinking. So I think those kinds of things, they themselves enjoyed some work that we did on the domestic slave trade. I didn't get the sense as much that they would be teaching so much of that material necessarily to their students.
Mm-hmm. Well, Stephanie Camp, thank you for being with us today.
Thank you so much.
And thanks to you, Michelle Evans, as well. Thank
You're welcome.
Stephanie Campin is an assistant professor of history at the University of Washington in Seattle. She joined us from member station KUOW in Seattle. And Michelle Evans is the associate director for interpretation at the Connor Prairie Living Museum in Fishers, Indiana. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And here are some of the headlines from NPR News today. A new audio tape purporting to feature the voice of Osama bin Laden has been broadcast on the Arab television network Al Jazeera. We'll have more on that from NPR's Mike Schuster. Meanwhile, momentum appears to be building for an initiative to boost weapons inspections in Iraq as an alternative to war. China voiced support today for a proposal by France, Germany, and Russia to give UN weapons inspectors more tools to disarm Iraq. And NPR's Nick Spicer has that story. Those are both coming up in a bit on All Things Considered. For one organization in London, the discussion about slavery takes place in the present tense. Anti-Slavery International has been organizing against slavery since 1839, and they are still at it. Joining us now from London is David Ould, who is Deputy Director of Anti-Slavery International. Thank you for being with us today.
That's great.
Well, David Ould, could you tell us more about why the organization got started? Because Britain had outlawed slavery in the colonies in 1833, and you were founded after that.
That's right. What happened was that for the 6 years after the abolition in the colonies, the organization and the people who lobbied and campaigned for that to come in monitored what was going on. Was it really happening? Mm-hmm. Once it became clear that it was, what they then said was, what about the rest of the world? It's one thing, perhaps, to actively campaign against the problems in your own backyard, but slavery is international, and perhaps we should be trying to campaign against it everywhere else, and mm-hmm. particularly that meant the USA and Brazil at the time, but gradually worked on much wider.
Mm-hmm. What were some of the tactics in the beginning that you would use to bring an end to slavery?
I think that's quite interesting when you think about the sorts of campaigning that people are doing on slavery discrimination today. It, in fact, was very similar. In the 1840s, for instance, there was a big debate about the rights and wrongs of buying sugar made by slaves in Brazil. And in the UK, you could certainly buy jars of sugar labelled not made by slaves. And this was sugar that was brought in from the Caribbean, from the British Commonwealth, where slavery had been abolished. So the sorts of discussions that we have at the moment about boycotts, and you've all heard the discussions about cocoa recently, how to be able to tell what it was that you were buying and that it wasn't made by slavery was being discussed in exactly the same way in the 1840s.
How effective was that?
I suppose what I'd probably say there is about as effective as it is today, which means that it had an effect. It did move things. More sugar was bought from the colonies, but it did not in itself end slavery in Brazil. But it was one pressure point, and these things gradually build up, and slavery was abolished in Brazil by the late 1870s. It took a long time.
Right. How did those tactics change over the years?
I think what's happened is that much more now, we are working with local people, we're working with local organizations. So instead of just a few activists, or I think radicals, I heard them described earlier in your program, campaigning for the rights of people around the world, what you have now are local organizations supported by international organizations campaigning. People, after all, free themselves. They don't get freed from separately of the big movement in terms of the transatlantic slave trade was when it became clear to slaves that they had rights and that they could rise up for them.
Mm-hmm. Although in the United States it was the end of the Civil War that brought an end to that. There was a war over that issue. Push came to shove here.
I think push came to shove, but push always comes to shove, but it only comes to shove once people have enough information and enough push to stand up for themselves. At that point, you can help them much more easily.
Where do you focus your efforts right now?
It is worldwide, but clearly there are more. The issues like bonded labor in South Asia are huge numbers of people. We're certainly talking many millions of people. There's increasing problems on trafficking of people around the world into different forms of forced labor, and this can be anything from domestic service in countries in West Africa to women sold and forced into prostitution in the United States.
Well, David Ould, thanks for being with us today.
Thanks very much. And perhaps I could say that if people want to hear more about what we're doing, they can go to our website, antislavery.org, and there's also information on that website about the historical slave trade, which they can see on Breaking the Silence on there.
Well, David Ould, thanks again. David Ould is Deputy Director of Anti-Slavery International. He spoke to us from his home in London, England. In Washington, I'm Melinda Penkava, NPR News.